All right, good morning. Thank you all for coming. Today we are presenting the results of the audit of the Missouri Higher Education Loan Authority, which we're going to refer to as MOHELA. I want to give you just a little bit of background on this. Of course, this is a entity that first got some attention when the governor proposed selling off some of the assets. Up to that point, I think that none of us and most people in government didn't realize that this entity was even out there amassing assets. When I was campaigning for this office, the severance package on one of the former board members became public, which was yet another red flag as to something that may have been going on with this entity. So on the first day of office, we began the audit of MOHELA. And what we have found is kind of what we had anticipated. Because the entity itself was running under the radar, it was largely not being overseen. And what we find and the results that we find in this audit is just a lot of examples of what happens when you have an entity that is dealing with public monies but is operating like a private firm but without any shareholders to be accountable to. And so I'm going to go through the audit and just give you some of the highlights of the things that we have found. One thing that I am going to point out, and this happens in many of these audits, is that when we are in doing the audit, the entities that we are auditing start making changes. And in fact, the MOHELA board had made significant changes by this time. There are a lot of things that have already been changed to for the better. And that's one of the rewarding things of being in the field on these audits is that at the time where we're presenting a lot of problems and bad things that have happened, maybe the entity is on its way to having corrected many of those. And I'm going to point some of those things out in the audit. What I'd like to do is just kind of go through and give you the highlights and then, of course, answer any questions. In the first finding that we have, we talk about the identification and use of surpluses, and this really is the overall issue as to what has happened with this entity. We found that MOHELA was able to amass a large amount of marketable assets. Of course, that was why the Lewis and Clark initiative could come about, because there was a lot of assets that could be turned into cash. As of June of 2006, the net assets were $234 million, and that is assets over liabilities. And the revenues exceeded the expenses in that year by $25 million. So the entity was making a profit of $25 million. So certainly there was money that could be used in other ways. Our concern and our recommendation for this particular finding is that the General Assembly place some restrictions or guidance on how the surpluses would be calculated and how this money should be used. Our position is that there is a mission out for this entity, and the mission says that they are supposed to be using the monies to make higher education more affordable. They have a fiduciary responsibility to do that, and by just amassing the assets, and then regardless of where the assets have gone at this point, we believe that the General Assembly needs to put some guidance on what should be done to further the mission when you are running this type of a profit. And that is a good problem to have, certainly, that they're making a profit. The second recommendation that we offer has to do with the severance packages. And certainly that's the one that I referenced that got us all involved in this in the first place. And what we found was that there were about $2.3 million in severance benefits paid to four former executives. And we detail out what these were. And so without going into a lot of detail on them, it's certainly in here. But the first executive that resigned was making an annual salary of $255,000. But then he got another $500,000 of additional pay. He also started getting pension benefits that for life, that is another $100,000. And then our concern over this is the severance agreement that was in place at the time that he was terminated actually called for more severance benefits than he received. So in terms of why that happened and what kind of leverage, we actually didn't have access to that information, so I'll talk to you about that in a minute. Executive number two, similar findings. There was a separation agreement in effect that called for a larger severance package than the person actually received. Number three that we detail out actually received the severance that they had, it in place. And then number four was another one where there was less. So we've got these examples of where you have very, very large, excessive severance packages for these people, and yet when they leave, we don't even know the reasons why the severance package they actually received was more or less. And so you've got an example where they were less, you've got an example where it was more. This is where the closed minutes come in. I'm going to talk specifically about closed minutes later in the audit, but we were denied access to the closed minutes that would have given us the reasons why these severance packages differed from the severance agreements. So we have two issues. One is they should not probably have had these large severance agreements in the first place, and secondly, they didn't even adhere to them. And this is an example of where the way that Mohila operates has been changed, and they now are no longer having these severance benefits. Our third recommendation talks about other payroll issues. And in the beginning, when I talked about just having so much money and figuring out where to divvy it out, severance agreements was one, but another one was excessive benefits. What we found was that the executives were, in addition to their salaries, receiving bonuses that equated to somewhere between 40 and 50% of their annual base salaries. In each of the years where the executives were in place, they all received these bonuses. So our concern here is that the goals to reach bonuses appear not to have been difficult goals to reach. We kind of detail out those. But when you have someone who is making a salary of $350,000 and then they get a year-end bonus of $157,000, it certainly is excessive. And we were not able to get the documentation to tell us how they were setting these goals in the first place. Other benefits that we found that were being paid out that we termed as excessive is vacation leave. Each of these executives was receiving 6 weeks of vacation leave. In addition to the 6 weeks of vacation leave, they were also receiving 6 weeks of personal time off. So a total of 12 weeks or 3 months of ability to take time off. And, of course, they're also getting these performance bonuses. In addition to that, we've got car allowances that started out at $750 a month. And so we've got people making, you know, between $26,000 and $30,000 of car allowance in a month. There are life insurance policies on these executives, which had cash surrender values that the company paid in the premiums on, but the executives were allowed to surrender those. And then when they retired, they were eligible for no-cost medical. So their medical premiums were also to be paid for life. So overall, it's clear that these are excessive benefits when compared to actually anywhere else in the private sector. In addition to that, the executives were receiving all of these benefits and the other employees were not receiving comparable benefits. One thing that we also talk about here is Christmas gifts and bonuses. In addition to those bonuses, there was $688,000 spent on a three-year period on Christmas gifts and bonuses. Every time I issue one of these audits and I say, you can't give Christmas bonuses, I feel a little bit like Scrooge. But the point is, you can't use public money to give out gifts, and that's what's happening here. And so in 1 year, everyone got $1,000. In another year, everyone got $1,500. But you always have to keep in mind that these are public monies. The only other thing that we address here is just a general provision is that we believe that the policies in place for state employees and other public employees ought to be applied to the Mohila employees as well. And so we think they should be following some of these issues in terms of whether they've paid their state income taxes and those types of things. Now, as before, Mohila has changed some of the things that they are doing. They have a lot of the employees receiving the same benefit packages now, and they're not getting these types of holiday gifts. The fourth recommendation that we talk about is mostly on construction projects, but I'm going to talk about bids and procurement a little bit later in the audit as well. There was no competitive bids on the building that Mohila built for their headquarters. It was a cost of $11.2 million. Another thing that was a problem with that is that no bids, no documentation as to how the contractor was selected. In addition, Mohila paid out $1.25 million in rent payments on the space that they had been occupying prior to moving into their building. They were not able to sublease that. So you have several issues going on with with the new building. There are also some other real estate managers and various contracts related to these things that were not bid out. What we found is just in general a lack of any kind of bid procedures. Now, Mohila has instituted a policy in March of 2007, and now they are bidding out these types of activities. Then we talk in general about expenditures in number five. In addition to the bid proposals that that they didn't get for large construction contracts, there are other issues where things were not bid out. And we've detailed out many of the services. For example, their attorney fees at $1.7 million or marketing services. We talk about consulting, the trustee bank services. None of these things were bid out. And again, they have now a bid policy in place. We talked about a little bit of the expenditures. It's more of the same. There was a lot of money spent on board retreats, about $46,000 spent on the annual retreats. There's a lot of catering. There's alcohol purchases, travel things. We found they took everyone to a local dinner theater for, $5,800. A holiday party where, you hire a disc jockey for $575 and pay $500 for a magic show. So it's just more of the same monies that were spent that we consider would not be appropriate use of public monies. Fitness center memberships, things like that. Then we do discuss some of issues with just documentation of your expenditures. If you're going to make those expenditures, you need to document them and account for them properly anyway. We think they shouldn't be making them. We also talk about a little bit of later on here about some of the decision-making and making plans. One thing that we point out was a marketing plan, which $250,000 was spent on radio advertisements during the St. Louis Cardinals game. They tracked the results of that on a special phone number, and the total inquiries were between 5 and 10 total for the $250,000 of advertising costs. Mohila has taken some steps to put some policies in place and some expenditure policies as well as maybe planning. So hopefully those things won't be happening in the future as well. Another issue that we had had to do with property records and control. What we found is that we don't know what assets Mohila actually has. They have a $10,000 cutoff. They're not inventorying anything below that. Except for maybe laptops, and what we found is their laptop listing is not up to date. So we don't know who has what, and they're accounting them for the laptops that people are taking home, but they had purchased office equipment and furniture for people in their home offices, and that isn't accounted for anywhere either. They did have issues with disposing of those assets as well. First, we didn't list them, and then we sell them off in a manner that isn't consistent with how we handle public assets. There were concerns. They have an internal auditor that also expressed some of these same concerns, and they have made some changes to that because of that. I'm going to talk about the internal audit issues now. They did have an internal auditor, but it was an outside firm. The auditing firm had difficulty getting information from Mohila, and so they weren't getting any of their information in a timely manner. They have taken steps to change that and now have brought it back inside. So hopefully some of these decision-making issues are dealt with now. The next one just is something that we deal with and we see a lot, vehicle usage, controls on your vehicle usage, keeping logs and making sure that the vehicles are used in an appropriate manner. There were no vehicle logs, and Mohila has taken some steps to address that as well. The last finding is the one that I referred to earlier, is the finding on the closed minutes. Our position on this, of course, is being litigated, and so we'll see. But we have a couple of issues here. One is that the information that we talked about not having on the severance packages, of course, was not given to us because we were denied access to the closed minutes. One issue that we do have is whether or not the law that established Mohila has set them up to have closed minutes in the first place. We believe the General Assembly needs to make a change. The laws that set up Mohila says, each meeting of the authority for any purpose whatsoever shall be open to the public. So if you read that by itself, it says no closed meetings at all. Then you go over to the provisions of the Sunshine Law, and the Sunshine Law give you ways that a meeting can be closed, but the preface to that is, except to the extent that disclosure is otherwise required by law. Our interpretation of the statute is that except as otherwise provided by law means unless you have another statute out there that governs you specifically and says you should disclose. And in this case, they do. So our position is that Mohila should not be holding closed meetings at all, and that the General Assembly needs to step in and clarify whether or not they should be subject to the Sunshine Law. As you saw several places throughout the audit, I said, here is what is suggested by the other laws that govern public entities, and Mohila isn't really subject to those because they have their own statutes. In this particular case, the same interpretation should apply. They are not really subject to those, even though some of them may be a good idea. Like I said, that issue is currently under litigation right now. It was a subject of the lawsuit that the AG's office brought against the entity on sunshine violations, but that lawsuit was settled, and so that issue was not settled. So at some point, that issue would be settled. And that is the conclusion of what we have in the audit. Like I said at the beginning, I think that you can see just examples of where spending was allowed to happen because of a lack of oversight. And now Mohila is in the forefront. People know it's there. They know there's a lot of money being made, and we certainly are overseeing it. There's been a lot of changes made. And so I don't think we'll see anything like this again, and I'm hoping for some improvements for the entity to go ahead and try to fulfill its mission.